A short while ago, we had a troubling conversation on this show about the upsurge in the abuse of prescription drugs, and we learned that there is another very serious source for abuse, synthetically created drugs. Well, joining us again today to help us understand this problem and what needs to be done about it are Michelle Kaliva, the Administrative Director of the Upstate Poison Center, and Dr. Alexander Garrard, a clinical toxicologist with the Upstate Poison Center and Assistant Clinical Professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Upstate Medical University. Hello, welcome to you both. So let's start with something that I understand is happening right now. There have been a number of reported deaths associated with synthetic marijuana. Michelle, tell us about that.
We've actually had two deaths. They weren't called into the Poison Center, so we are made aware of them by the Commissioner of Health for Onondaga County, and very, very troubling. I believe, and I'm not exactly sure on ages, they were both in their 20s, I believe.
So what is this thing called synthetic marijuana?
You know, synthetic marijuana is this kind of new drug that's probably been on the market, if you will, for about 2 years or now. So in essence, it's what's marketed as legal marijuana because it doesn't show up on the drug screen, and at the time it wasn't regulated. So it's really synthetic chemicals that are sprayed on a bunch of herbs to mimic the effects of real marijuana or actually, THC. On the streets.
Do they really mimic the effects of marijuana? I mean, are they effective in that respect?
When they first came out, they certainly did. But as the drug has kind of progressed and evolved, now people are adding different chemicals to it, and we're starting to see a number of reactions to these synthetic marijuana compounds that are very different from real marijuana itself.
So what I'm not clear about exactly is you made a comment to say that it somehow avoids an illegal connotation. How is that?
Well, one thing, part of the Controlled Substance Act and analog provision of that, which is a federal regulation, says that anything that mimics another drug of abuse would be considered illegal. That's the analog provision. Now, they can say, not for human consumption, which is when you look on these packets of synthetic marijuana products like K2 or Spice, it'll say not for human consumption, herbal incense, what have you. So that's one way they're able to get around that loophole.
So in other words, they're really, basically, it's kind of a wink and a nod. They're doing it, and they know they're doing it for human consumption, but this is how they avoid the fact that it's illegal.
Yeah, I mean, I think unless you're in that actual community, you would think herbal incense, what's the problem? It's just like any other incense I buy. But people that are in that circle, if you will, understand that these are actual synthetic products that can be abused.
So who, Michelle, do we know who makes these things?
Oh, there's a variety of companies that do it. In fact, you can go online and purchase this very readily. You might purchase it thinking, no, let me back up. You might go online and buy fish food, only you know it's not really fish food. And the person who is selling to you knows it's not really fish food. And a few days later, after you've ordered online, will come your package of fish food. But in fact, it's this synthetic marijuana.
Wow.
As soon as someone becomes aware of the fact that this website, this company is selling fish food, they'll take that off, change it up a little bit, and put a new name on it, and maybe it's lens cleaner. But again, as Alexander said, if you're in the community, you're in the know, you know that lens cleaner is just a euphemism for this synthetic marijuana.
So recently, these deaths have occurred. Is that a very, very recent phenomenon? Meaning, you said before, Alexander, that it's been on the market over 2 years. So this is the first incidence of that kind of thing happening? Or do we know that that it's led to other deaths?
It's two that we are aware of that have been reported.
But, and locally.
Yes, but the problem is that I'm not sure within the last couple of years that it had been identified. I think right now we're, as healthcare providers, are becoming more attuned and more aware of it. So I suspect there's probably a lot more cases than we know. We had 184 in our 54 coverage area reported to us in 2011 to date. But since January, we've had 75. So we're definitely
75 what?
Cases.
Oh, cases,
yeah,
not death. Not leading
not
to death.
Cases that have ended up in a healthcare facility. That's significant since January. 46 of them had moderate symptoms, so enough that they were either admitted or observed for a period of time. That's substantial, given the relatively newness of this
so
drug.
So I guess what I don't... obviously, there's an increase in problems associated with it, and what we're going to do in, a little later after the break is talk about some of the other products that are out there that can cause trouble. Mm-hmm. But in your estimation, why do these create a problem, or why are they potentially lethal?
Well, for one, a lot of these compounds are not regulated. They're not tested by the FDA for safety, efficacy, if you will, side effect profile. These are compounds that really are synthesized in a lab, could be in a basement or anywhere. And so they're just sprayed on, you know, these compounds, these, if you will, potpourri, like the herbal incense, and you don't know the concentration of the drug itself. So people overestimate how much they need to take to achieve a certain effect. You know, everybody's different. One drug doesn't work the same for one person as it does for another. And there are a lot of perhaps genetic differences that we don't quite understand yet, how people handle the drug, that can cause a lot of significant health problems.
Well, that would be true, it seems to me, with any illegal drugs. Anything that's not being regulated, that's being watched, we have that potential hazard. And we even know when we open a package of prescription drugs, if we read the little flyer that's in there, many of us wouldn't take the drug. I mean, there's so many potential side effects or hazards. But I guess what I'm wondering about is what makes this special, the synthetic nature of it? Does that create any issue, I mean, in terms of law enforcement or in terms of drug control or poison control?
I think probably what's just what's so difficult about it is that coming from the synthetic nature, there probably is a lot of contaminants that are in it, for one. It is so new, so our actual understanding of the drug itself is constantly evolving. You know, some of the, like, cocaine, PCP, have been out on the market for years, and we have a pretty good understanding of how those affect people. But these new compounds, it's so new, we don't quite understand how it works in the body. We have an idea, but it's, again, constantly evolving because it is so new.
And so that obviously reflects on what kind of treatments you can make available, whether you can, in fact, intervene and save a life or even recognize the symptoms, I would think. As you said, if people are showing up at emergency rooms with kind of a strange cadre of symptoms, you may not know what the cause of this is, or you may not recognize what's happening.
Right. Although we are taking a concerted effort to get the word out to the emergency departments, we're letting them know.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought, because we're going to take a very quick break, and we'll be right back right after that to talk more about the various other synthetic drugs that are on the show. Welcome back to HealthLink On Air. Linda Cohen, along with Michelle Kaliva and Dr. Alexander Gerard. And we're talking about the rise in the use of synthetic drugs and the hazards they bring. Now, right before the break, we were talking about the fact that there's an alarming increase and people are dying from it. And what do you see in terms of the kinds of symptoms when people come in? What are the kinds of things, especially with synthetic marijuana?
Right. Well, you know, synthetic marijuana, marijuana in general is going to produce somewhat of a very relaxed state, maybe a little bit of euphoria. But these patients that are coming in with these synthetic compounds are quite the opposite. They're almost presenting a little bit like amphetamines. They're very agitated. Almost over half of patients come in agitated. They're tachycardic, meaning they have a racing heart, high blood pressure, and, you know, all the way up to the extreme of potentially even having seizures, muscle breakdown, kidney failure.
In the couple of situations where people have died, what were the causes of death?
Most people in these situations either die from hyperthermia, so they have a very high body temperature, or perhaps even seizures, or cardiac, you know, abnormal cardiac rhythms.
An arrhythmia, yeah. Something like that.
And again, I think the caveat, one thing to always note with these drugs of abuse that you buy on the street, is that they're never 100% pure. So there could be a number of other drugs that are in it that you don't know about, whether it be prescription drugs or other illicit compounds.
So I want to talk specifically about some of the other drugs out there, but I'm wondering now, what kind of efforts are underway for you guys in terms of educating the community about this drug, drugs in general?
I think that the first concern is that when we talk to some of the younger population, and actually, if you look at the age cohort, it's predominantly 15 to 19, and then again, it picks up again 20 to 29, when we talk to these patients, what they'll often say is they had no idea, they didn't realize this stuff is legal, so they have this confidence that it's going to be safer, that it's going to be okay, so they have really no clue. And I think that reality has gotten us quite concerned. So we are doing a two-prong approach to educate both the healthcare community so they know what to look for, and to let healthcare, you know, ED staff, EMS staff know that if a patient presents with these symptoms, that somewhere on the radar you have to think synthetic drug abuse, but also talk to the parents and to educators and say, listen, this is going on, and there is this, you know, again, confidence, it's a mistake, this thought that this is going to be okay, that this is going to be safe.
Yeah, I mean, this whole notion of it being legal, as we talked about in the first half, really makes it seem almost, like you said, benign. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in fact, it's more dangerous in a way.
I mean, it's the whole, it goes with the same idea that herbal products are safer. You know, but when you think
this
about
is like health, this is like from a health store.
I mean, you think right. But you think some of our cancer drugs come from plants. Some of our heart medications are derived from plants. So just because there's the word herbal in it or because it's legal doesn't necessarily mean that it's safer.
And the fact is it's legal really because of a ruse. I mean, it's not truly legal in a sense. Is that correct? Or I mean, it hasn't, I guess, are there efforts to make it illegal?
Yes. There are absolute efforts, both on a federal and a state level. It has not moved forward as of yet, but it's in progress, absolutely. But you can walk into, in some cases, a convenience store or into a head shop or into a variety of stores.
Or go online.
And go online and walk in and see it. And they're packaged like incense in some cases, and they have lovely names. Mm-hmm. And, you know, certainly there's no outward appearance of it looking threatening.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, talking about some of the other compounds there, like bath salts, for instance.
Yeah, let's talk about what some of them are.
I know, like, what you just mentioned, they're marketed and they have such a benign appearance, you know, like, it's not really going to be a problem. It's, you know, a picture of some legs with some floral arrangement makes it look really nice, you know, aromatherapy. But then it turns out you use it in synthetic amphetamine compounds, you know.
But now let me get this straight. When you say, if someone innocently were to purchase this and use it in the way that they had thought it was supposed to be used, for example, bath salts, if you threw them in the bathtub, could they be harmful to you?
Unlikely in the amount that they actually supply. It usually comes as a concentrated 500 milligram packet, if you will. And assuming that somebody takes a bath in a normal size bathtub, it's probably unlikely to cause any significant toxicity. You know, the dermal absorption or the absorption across the skin is not that great for these compounds. But again, it's not something that I would probably risk, you know, if they have cuts in the skin or perhaps, you know, absorption via the genitalia or what have you. You know, I think there's certainly a risk.
So the point is that it's being marketed. It's really a poison in a sense, or it has the potential to create havoc. And yet, if an innocent person, someone not, quote unquote, in the know, were to purchase these things, they risk some real hazards, it sounds
like. Well, you're absolutely that, but then you also have the other side where people don't quite understand that these are a specific type of bath salts. So, you know, and they're wanting to actually achieve the euphoria associated with these. And then they go to like a Bed Bath & Beyond, you know, store, buy bath salts there and snort those, and then they have a lot of other problems associated with those. So it's like they're wanting to get to that end point, but they're, you know.
So this whole idea of using these kind of euphemistic terms for these drugs is a problem to begin with. Mm-hmm. So let's go through a couple of what they are. So bath salts is one. Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the others.
So certainly the bath salts is pretty recent, actually probably within about the year and a half. We have the herbal incense, which, as Michelle was mentioning, could be marketed as like fish food or pond cleaner is another thing.
Pond cleaner?
Mm-hmm.
So it's fish food, pond cleaner, and it's actually synthetic marijuana.
Yeah, it's likely. But you know that these things can also be marketed under, you know, it could be different drugs under the same name. So pond cleaner might perhaps be another name for these bath salts or synthetic amphetamine compounds. Another one that we've particularly seen here in our kind of Syracuse area is water. You know, people who smoke water, which is essentially marijuana and PCP, that combination. And PCP on the street can be sold either as formaldehyde or embalming fluid. So then you have people that are, you know, unaware that it's actually PCP that are breaking into funeral homes and actually taking real embalming fluid, actual formaldehyde, and dipping their marijuana joints in the actual formaldehyde. And there are, of course, a lot of problems associated with that, both acute and chronic effects long term.
Wow, this is really mind-blowing, frankly. I mean, because of all of this kind of euphemism that surrounds it leads to a lot of confusion, I would think. And unless you're really kind of, I hate to say it, but on the cutting edge of drug use, you know, illegal drug use, you might really, in any case, run into problems because of the way the drugs are being produced. But even if you were in the know, but if you're not in the know, it seems to me that it can be really quite hazardous.
You know, another one that comes in my mind was just recently in Louisiana, there was a compound that was marketed as a room odorizer. It was a spray, actually, but it didn't really spray anything out. It came out more like a gel, and it's basically essentially a benzodiazepine or a drug similar to Xanax or Valium. And it's a pretty strong drug coming from Russia that is enough to really put you in a coma, you know, if you're not, you know, tolerant to those types of medications.
So how do the people in the know, quote unquote, in the know, get to know about all this since it's so rapidly changing? Do you have any sense of that? Have people shared that with you?
I think there's a whole subculture. Mm-hmm. I think that social media works well as well. A lot of very bright, if I can say that, intelligent people in terms of their knowledge of chemicals and how chemicals work. And again, there's a lot of communication, and I always...
So they would say, for example, you know, do this with the bath salts. That's kind of something. But when you say social media, this stuff is out there.
Oh, people talk about it. And
online?
Absolutely. I would say that if you talk to children that are in high school and college, you'll find that they're very knowledgeable about this whole.
What strikes me as interesting is how this hasn't led then to, you know, law enforcement following up on some of these things.
Actually, it has. I spoke with a gentleman from our sheriff department yesterday who said they're absolutely on it. And when there are altercations, when they're called to various scenes, that they are aware of it and they are tracking it and paying attention to it, which is why, again, I think there's a strong movement towards legislation.
But until it's made illegal, then it's basically in the hands of health professionals to deal with the results. Is that correct?
Yeah.
To the untoward results that occur.
Yeah.
So what did you say that there are efforts right now to try to make it illegal?
Yes, both on a federal and a state level.
Mm-hmm. But do you have any sense as to how long that might be before that occurs?
It has been an ongoing process for the last year that they're trying to move it through.
Wow. It's almost like you can't stay ahead of it.
Yeah, that's
so what advice, with that in mind and the fact that it is so readily available, it sounds like, and there is this whole entire subculture around it, what kind of recommendations would you make to parents or grandparents or anybody who's concerned about their youth
getting these drugs? I think they need to talk to their children, and I think they need to become educated. And again, we're making a concerted effort to get the word out to the public. We will come and talk to parent groups. We will be happy to come to any school district and provide a presentation for parents. We will be happy to talk to students. Education is key here, and awareness. We really need to get the word out into the community that this is a problem.
I'm wondering if you've ever had the opportunity to address someone who proposed this to someone who's actually had a problem. In other words, one of your patients coming through, maybe having, you know, just saved his life kind of thing, his or her life. And is there any effort to then garner their help in getting the word out, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent thought. I know we've had several patients that after, you know, feeling like they're dying have been like, you know, I am never doing that again. And those would be the people that we could really advocate for this kind of push, because they've been there and they know that what you're buying is not what you think.
Well, I want to thank you so much for the work that you're doing and the fact that you're trying to get this word out. Let's hope we've contributed to that in some way. My guests have been Michelle Kaliva, Administrative Director of the Upstate Poison Center, and Dr. Alexander Garrod. He's the Clinical Toxicologist for the Upstate Poison Center and Clinical Professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Upstate Medical University. We'll be right back with right after the news with more HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to FM News Radio, 106.9 and 570 WSYR.